We just heard Snowy White talking about her grandmother, Delina White. Now Delina tells us about her grandmother.
There was a woman named Maggie King, the wife of John King from Onigum, one of 14 villages located on the Leech Lake Indian Reservation in northern Minnesota. Her friends called her Shib, a nickname from the Anishinaabe word for duck. I think it was probably her given Indian name. We all have one of those. I knew her as Grandma. My grandma loved me with all her heart, and I her. We didn't have running water or electricity back then, and it wasn't until the 1970s that the reservation finally got electricity. Indoor plumbing didn't come until way later, until new HUD houses were finally built with wells and septic systems. We lived in a two-room tar paper shack, a front room and a back room that was separated by a curtain in the doorway. The front room is where we would have visitors and consisted of a formica kitchen table with three chairs, just enough for my grandma, my baba, which is a shortened version of the Anishinaabe word babanan, which is what we called our grandpas, even though it is not the formal word for grandfather, which is Neshomis. Baba is a root word for travel, whereas you can find that root word in many words that are related to travel, such as the word for tent, like packing it up and taking it with you when you travel. So I assume that babas would walk around or travel. Anyway, there were just enough chairs for my grandma, my baba, and me. There was also a small sofa, a cupboard, and a stove. I have my grandma's cupboard with me in my home now, in her chipped white enamel sugar bowl, which I cherish. It was quiet in our home. Sometimes my baba would turn on his transistor radio, and I remember hearing songs by Glen Campbell, John Denver, and Badfinger. I am an only child and was the only grandchild until I became an adult, so I've never minded spending quiet time alone. I would sit for hours looking at the birthday cards and Christmas cards my grandma saved and imagined I was inside those scenes, riding in a one-horse open sleigh on a cold winter's evening over the gentle, glittery, snowy slopes, dressed in 1800 style white man clothes. My grandmother had a small wooden box that permeated a wonderful aroma of cedar as I opened it to reveal a white leather Bible. Inside was my first introduction to religious Renaissance paintings that captured my fascination of the idea of heaven and hell. My grandma kept a small coffee tin at the top of her cupboard that I asked to look into one day. She said, which I think was an affirmative because she never objected when I proceeded to take action. In it were hundreds of mixed beads and sequins of different sizes, shapes, and colors. Oh my, I had hit the jackpot. My grandma was a master beadwork artist, although she would never call herself that. We would sit at her kitchen table that overlooked Agency Bay and do beadwork together. Her beadwork was magnificent, in the woodland floral style on velvet. She would sell her bags for $5 to the white women who lived in town. I would simply string the beads and sequins onto thread in different color patterns. I remember one summer looking at the lake and thinking how beautiful and shimmery the sun reflected from it. And I told my grandma, the lake is as pretty as a beaded dress. My grandma became blind in one eye and could hardly see out of the other, but she could always see beadwork. My best compliment ever came from my grandma one day when I showed her some of the beadwork I was making and she said, "You beat me," meaning my beadwork was better than hers. I was so proud, but I knew that was her way of encouraging me to keep beading. That is why beadwork has such a strong connection to my grandma and my life as a